The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs started its 64th annual session in Vienna, Austria, on Monday, April 12th. The plenary sessions were webcast once again, and this year, thanks to the pandemic, all of the side events that normally go on each year at the CND meetings are also being webcast. The sessions this year are absolutely brilliant. I'm recording as much as I can so that I can bring you audio from the CND over the coming weeks. We'll even hear some of that on today's show. But first, the Drug Policy Alliance, the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, and the American Civil Liberties Union are leading a coalition of over 100 drug policy, civil rights, criminal law, and public health organizations in urging Congress and the Biden administration to not repeat the mistakes of the past, and instead to allow the previous administration's temporary class-wide emergency scheduling of fentanyl-related substances to expire in May of 2021. They held a virtual news conference on Monday, April 12th. First, let's hear from Grant Smith. He's Deputy Director of the Office of National Affairs at the DPA.
Now, fentanyl analogs are not new. They've been around for a long time. They've been contributing to the overdose crisis in recent years in a pronounced way. But fentanyl analogs are not new. And in fact, in the 1980s, Congress imposed severe mandatory minimums for involving scheduled fentanyl analogs. So cases involving scheduled fentanyl analogs that have been scheduled on the Controlled Substances Act. And so these are mandatory minimums that are so severe that in cases involving as little as 10 grams of a substance, that's the equivalent in weight to 10 paperclips as illustrated here. If you have a substance, let's say it's 10 grams, it could be anything. It could be baking powder. It could be an illicit substance. If it contains just a trace amount of one of these thousands of different analogs that are out there, that it's scheduled, that triggers a five-year mandatory minimum. If you have a substance, if you have a quantity of a substance of less than 10 grams, let's say it's 9.9 grams of a substance like baking powder that contains a trace amount of one of these scheduled fentanyl analogs, you could get up to 20 years in federal prison for that. So the weight of 10 paper clips, very small amount of a substance, all you need is a detectable amount, just a trace amount of one of these scheduled fentanyl analogs, and that triggers either a mandatory minimum or, in the case of less than 10 grams, up to 20 years in prison. Very harsh sentences that have been around for decades, right? So we had these known scheduled fentanyl analogs for years. In recent years, we've seen the emergence of more of novel fentanyl analogs, newer fentanyl analogs, but again, not scientifically studied, not fully evaluated. Trump's Department of Justice, however, reacted, right, by saying, we're going to take an unprecedented approach. We're going to schedule all substances that are chemically similar to fentanyl. So we're not just going to look at those fentanyl analogs that appear to pose a health risk. We're going to treat all the fentanyl analogs the same as a class. And we're going to schedule all of them and put them all on Schedule 1 all at once. And just as a point of reference, marijuana is on Schedule 1, right? And treat it as a Schedule 1 substance. This was done without input from scientists, which is typically done when these scheduling decisions are made by the Department of Justice. And in 2018, this class-wide scheduling of fentanyl analogs was implemented. Again, putting all of these substances based on chemical structure alone on Schedule 1. Now, this, as I said, this is very problematic because government scientists and others were not consulted. And so all these different analogs with different levels of potency were suddenly treated as Schedule 1 drugs. And because they were now scheduled fentanyl analogs, those very severe penalties I just described now applied or could apply to all these different fentanyl analogs. So you have cases now where you have different ranges of potency level, thousands of different known fentanyl analogs, but the same severe mandatory minimums and other harsh penalties apply. And so this policy was first implemented in 2018 as a temporary scheduling measure. And then it was set to expire last year in early 2020. However, Congress agreed to extend it by 15 months to May 6, 2021. Now, Congress heard some of their concerns, including concerns we're going to discuss today, and they agreed not, and they decided not to permanently schedule it, permanently extend this, as the Trump administration wanted. And in fact, the Trump administration, put a lot of pressure on Congress to permanently extend this, using again a lot of the same fear and misinformation tactics that I described earlier. But they did extend it for 15 months, and it's currently set to expire on May 6. They did so believing the Department of Justice, and when they said that doing so would decrease fentanyl analog availability and overdose deaths, as well as the Department of Justice claimed they would only use this expanded authority to prosecute to go after kingpins, importers, and manufacturers. So what happened? Over the last year, even just over the last year, we can look at what's been happening under this class-wide scheduling. First, did overdose deaths decrease involving synthetic opioids, involving fentanyl analogs and fentanyl? Well, when you look at data just from June 2019 through May 2020, overdose deaths involving synthetic opioids, which includes fentanyl and fentanyl-involved substances, increased dramatically and spread west during that time. So in this graph, you can see, or in this depiction, you can see all those states that have a dark red shading saw a 50% or more increase in synthetic opioid overdose deaths in that time frame at the bottom of the slide. And so we did not see a decrease in overdose deaths involving these substances. Moreover, who bore the brunt of these prosecutions at the federal level? Well, when you look and see who's been prosecuted in cases involving synthetic or involving fentanyl analogs, it's primarily young Black men and street-level sellers. Street-level sellers and other people who play a minor role in the distribution of these substances, people at the street level who are not responsible for bringing these substances to the country or distributing large quantities. We're talking about individuals who are selling, and in many cases using, because they're selling to help facilitate access for their own substance use, very small amounts of these substances. Only 10% in 2019 of all the fentanyl analog prosecutions at the federal level involved major traffickers. More than half involved the most minor of roles, and 56% of all of those individuals prosecuted were handed a mandatory minimum. Overall, in recent years, between 2015 and 2019, fentanyl analog prosecutions have increased by more than 5,000%. This is all mostly, some of those years fall under the Obama administration, but we saw a dramatic increase under the Trump administration. And so finally, I'll just say, when you look at who's been prosecuted, it's predominantly young Black men, predominantly people of color, and all of this points to a very disturbing replay, a mirroring of the crack era, this time with fentanyl. It's clear that the Trump administration's response to fentanyl-related overdose has failed, and the consequences are recreating the fear and punitive and devastating reaction to crack cocaine when you see, you look at the parallels. And so we need a public health-based approach to fentanyl-related overdose death. We must allow this to expire on May 6th.
That was Grant Smith with the Drug Policy Alliance. He's deputy director of their Office of National Affairs. He was speaking on a news conference Monday, April 12th. The DPA and several other civil rights and social justice organizations are urging the Biden administration to not extend a temporary class-wide scheduling of fentanyl-related substances. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
You want to join me here? Won't you be seated, please, ladies and gentlemen? Come on, Dr. Jaffe. Mr. Krogh, Mr. Ehrlich. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to summarize for you the meeting that I have just had with the bipartisan leaders, which began at 8 o'clock and was completed 2 hours later. I began the meeting by making this statement, which I think needs to be made to the nation. America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive. I have asked the Congress to provide the legislative authority and the funds to fuel this kind of an offensive. This will be a worldwide offensive dealing with the problems of sources of supply as well as Americans who may be stationed abroad, wherever they are in the world. It will be government-wide, pulling together the 9 different fragmented areas within the government in which this problem is now being handled. And it will be nationwide in terms of a new educational program that we trust will result as from the discussions that we have had.
Let's hear more from that news conference. This is Nikechi Taifa. She's the author of a new memoir entitled Black Power, Black Lawyer, My Audacious Quest for Justice. She's also CEO of the Taifa Group and convener of the Justice Roundtable.
Thank you so very much, Grant. Good afternoon. My name is Nikechi Taifa, president of the Taifa Group and founder and convener of the Justice Roundtable. I have a long view of the criminal punishment system, having been in the trenches for nearly 40 years during a time when the prevailing narrative was tough on crime. The narrative that brought about the crack powder disparity supported the transfer of youth to adult courts and popularized the myth of the Black child as super predator. The narrative that led to mass incarceration with the devastating of communities of color wrought by what we now know has been a flawed and failed war on drugs. This narrative began to change with Justice Roundtable advocacy, which helped to secure passage of the 2008 Second Chance Reentry Bill, as well as the 2010 passage of the Fair Sentencing Act, which reduced the disparity between crack and powder cocaine. Advocacy that I spent nearly 2 decades fighting against, and a disparity that lawmakers are still working today to completely eliminate. I see a very disturbing nexus between the devastation of the reaction to crack cocaine in the 1980s and the reaction to illicit forms of fentanyl today. In the 1980s, Congress reacted in a knee-jerk fashion to crack mythology and fear and imposed severe mandatory minimums that devastated communities of color. The Trump administration similarly reacted to fentanyl misinformation and fear and implemented the class-wide scheduling of fentanyl analogs policy. This policy expands the application of some of the most severe penalties for drugs in the federal criminal code, including severe mandatory minimums in cases involving even trace amounts of fentanyl-related substances. We look at federal prosecutions involving these substances and see that the majority are people of color, selling and possessing small amounts at the street level, playing minor roles, not the kingpins, not the major traffickers. The majority of these people are being handed mandatory minimums, many for just even trace amounts of fentanyl analog, a weight of about 10 grams, a weight of a mere 10 paper clips, rendering a 5-year mandatory minimum sentence with no evidence needed that the seller even knew that it contained fentanyl. This is reminiscent of the once 5-year mandatory sentence for 2 sugar packet weight grams of crack cocaine. And once again, with fentanyl, people of color are being disproportionately policed and incarcerated just as they were with crack, and with a punitive approach being driven because of fear and misinformation. The Biden administration has pledged to end the use of mandatory minimum sentences and to address racial inequities in drug policy. Why? Why at a time when the murder of George Floyd is on our minds and in our hearts, when the very situation of over-policing that led to his death, why would the Biden administration consider supporting an extension of a Trump policy that exacerbates over-policing of communities of color, mass incarceration, and drug war? If Trump's class-wide scheduling of fentanyl analogs, if it is extended again, it will unfortunately be because the Biden administration and the Democratic majority in Congress are willing to put Black bodies on the line and are willing to ignore the mistakes of the past. We learned from the crack era that we must follow science and lead with health-based approaches to drugs, as opposed to allowing fear and racism and carceral approaches to prevail. Thank you.
That was Nikechi Taifa. She's an author, attorney, CEO of the Taifa Group, and convener of the Justice Roundtable. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. More from that DPA news conference. This is Hillary Shelton. He's director of the NAACP's Washington Bureau and their senior vice president for advocacy and policy.
But again, I'm just delighted to be here as we talk about the importance of this issue, something that the NAACP has been working with for against for generations. As a matter of fact, let me back up just a tiny bit. You know, the NAACP is the United States' oldest and largest grassroots-based civil rights organization. We have units and members literally in every state in the United States, but also in U.S. territories outside of the mainland. In essence, the issues that we talk about when we think about drug use, punishment, rehabilitation, and otherwise is something that has lived with our communities from the very beginning. So as we think about what's going on now, the NAACP very clearly opposes extending Trump's policy of class-wide scheduling of fentanyl analogs. We are convinced this policy greatly expands the ability of federal prosecutors to apply severe mandatory minimums in drug cases. I'm going to say this part a few times as we move through this. The NAACP has reaffirmed year after year in our 112-year history our opposition to mandatory minimum sentences. We've seen how they impact communities of color. We've seen how they impact poor communities and low-income communities. We've seen how they have not been helpful to anyone that literally did not have stock invested in private prisons. The Biden administration and leaders in the Congress are faced with their first major test of criminal justice reform, something we've spoken to Mr. Biden during his campaign, during the primaries, and even after he'd been elected as president of the United States. If they choose to extend this Trump-era policy, it will increase mass incarceration and the over-policing and incarceration of people of color, and will move in a very problematic way as a misposition on Biden's campaign promises. But we know that as we've talked to Mr. Biden, he gets it. He understands. This is someone that has worked in the criminal justice field for years, even before going to the United States Senate and serving on the Judiciary Committee. This is someone that has received the reports on the impact of our criminal justice system on poor people of color, people who have come to this country from other places seeking that beacon of freedom and opportunity for all that the U.S. so often promises. So as we think about these issues, we know that these campaign promises were actually born out of his understanding of how these issues affect us. He was part of those programs to address concerns in the 1980s and the 1990s, and of course, moving into the 2000s as well. Those policies in the name of being tough on crime, they've created problems, backlog, and actually increased the number of people in our prisons without increasing the beds that we need in our hospitals to take care of what is a healthcare issue and a healthcare concern. So he was there in the fights over the 1994 crime bill and the crack powder sentencing disparity. He understood how those issues worked, and even as addressing the NAACP at our last national convention in person, Mr. Biden was very clear on the mistakes that were made. Even Mr. Clinton came and spent time with us to talk about the mistakes that he'd made with the mandatory minimum promises and practices of the 1990s. So with that, federal sentencing data shows that Black and brown people are being disproportionately prosecuted for low-level offenses involving these fentanyl-related drugs. Extending Trump's class-wide scheduling policy would make this situation a situation that's even worse. We are not safer because we have the largest prison population in the world, and continuing along this path, believing that this step will succeed where every prior measure has failed, is irresponsible. is not thinking in terms of the real issues and challenges before us, and very well, we have not learned from many of the mistakes of the past. We started seeing what could happen when we began being more thoughtful about our criminal justice system, particularly as it addresses the issues of our drug laws in the country. What we saw happening when Mr. Obama was elected into the presidency, bringing Mr. Biden with him as the vice president of the United States, what we started seeing is a decrease in our prison population. Not because our country was becoming less safe, it was because our country was becoming smarter about how we utilize the resources that are so crucially important to keeping our neighborhoods and our families safe, and people with the real opportunity to be able to get to and attend school, get to work and attend that as well, and raise our families in a safe and secure environment. So we're convinced of this. We're convinced that we really need Mr. Biden and his administration to step up in a strong way, to make sure that these provisions are not in place. Mr. Trump made a lot of mistakes, and this was one of them. As someone that has been very thoughtful in not biting his tongue and criticizing those policies in the most constructive way, we're asking to also think about those policies now as we move to address this concern. And we want to see very well these policies struck down. So as we think about the families in our communities, as we think about the challenges of our children as they begin to get past, hopefully, this pandemic and make their way to school more often, as we think about our folks being more safe and secure in our communities, it is this change that we must have as well. So let me leave you with this. When Mr. Obama came into the White House, he brought with him a man by the name of Gil Kerlikowske to serve as the White House drug czar, as they like to call him. Mr. Kerlikowske understood what was going on as he'd been the police chief in King County in Seattle, Washington. He understood what would happen as they began making the changes in Seattle as a testing ground for what was going on, and seeing that the kind of mistakes that Mr. Trump was actually advocating for were the mistakes they'd made at one time as well. And with that, he moved to change those. And as police chief, it was an amazing thing to see someone in law enforcement say, it's not just about us. We've got to think about the wraparound services that come along with those that find themselves convicted of drug-related offenses. So, Grant, let me say thank you for allowing the NAACP to talk about these issues with our friends here, our coalition partners, as well as our friends and advocates on Capitol Hill, that we can see the changes that we know are necessary, and we look forward to working with you to move to bring these changes to a reality. When Obama took office, we had about 2.4 million Americans spending time in our prisons and jails on any given day. By the time he left, we'd reduced that by over 200,000 people being incarcerated, moving in the right direction because the right policies were pointing us in that right direction, knowing we were going to have to make some changes there. And as we think about this issue and this new change, as we think about what's going on Capitol Hill and what's happening throughout our country, we know that an awful lot of mistakes have been made around our drug laws in this country. Let's not be redundant. Let's make sure we move in the direction of making sure that every American has the opportunity to get the health care they need when these addictions occur, and make sure that we can all move through our streets and live up to that American promise of equal protection, equal opportunity. Emphasis on that opportunity as well for all Americans.
That was Hillary Shelton with the NAACP. He's a Senior Vice President for Advocacy and Policy and Director of their Washington Bureau. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
As I mentioned at the start of the show, the 64th annual session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs is April 12th through 16th this year. It's technically being held in Vienna, Austria, but because of the pandemic, it's being done as a web conference. I'll bring you a lot of audio from the CND over the next few weeks. There are dozens of side events going on, fascinating panel discussions and presentations. This year, for the first time ever, they're being live streamed. We only have a few minutes on today's show, so since this is the first CND for the Biden administration, we're going to hear from our drug czar. There was general discussion on the opening day, Monday, April 12th. The U.S. presentation was delivered by the acting director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Regina LaBelle. Here she is.
Hello, I'm Regina LaBelle, the acting director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. The United States is pleased to be participating in the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, because this is the forum which we can work together to make meaningful progress that will benefit all nations. I want to express our sincere appreciation for the Secretariat's efforts to make this meeting the first ever hybrid CND possible. We welcome the opportunity to engage with all delegates, even if we are not all physically in Vienna. The CND is the premier forum to focus on the problems caused by illicit drugs, and these problems are significant and made tragically worse by the COVID-19 pandemic. We know the effects that substance use disorder can have on communities, families, on health, and on our nations. We know, too, how synthetic drugs, including illicitly manufactured fentanyl and fentanyl analogs, and new psychoactive substances make existing problems worse. In the United States, illicitly manufactured synthetic drugs were responsible for more overdose deaths last year than any other substance, and they're becoming more prevalent in other countries as well. Every member of the CND knows we must address the problems that affect us all so we all may benefit. But we can't confront today's challenges with yesterday's methods. We have to modernize and make sure our approaches are responsive to current trends. In the United States, we're facing unprecedented levels of overdoses. On April 1st, we released President Biden's plan to address the addiction and overdose epidemic, which calls for modern solutions, such as expanding access to evidence-based treatment services and harm reduction services, and prioritizing racial equity. We also seek to expand access to recovery support services and reduce barriers to employment for people in recovery. Reducing the demand for drugs is an important part of the equation. So too is reducing the supply of illicit drugs, particularly synthetics, which includes addressing the supply of precursor chemicals used to make these substances. Many are now scheduled, but scheduling alone won't make them go away. As illicitly produced synthetic drugs proliferate, it's in all of our interest to focus on them. CND member states must ensure they have strong regulatory systems in place, particularly for tracking production in their chemical industries, to prevent bad actors from taking advantage of weak regulations and allow illicit production of these substances. While a strong regulatory framework is the most important piece, we must also engage the private sector in preventing the diversion of licit substances, as well as the production and shipping of illicit substances, including through mail carriers. In this regard, we welcome the adoption of the U.S.-sponsored Resolution 63/2, focused on public-private partnerships, and we implore all members to make its implementation a priority. The treaties provide the framework, and the CND provides the mechanism for member states to find a way to act on key issues. The United States looks forward to working together to address our common problems and save lives.
That was Regina LaBelle, acting director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. She was addressing the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs at the opening of its 64th session in Vienna, Austria, on Monday, April 12th. And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.